good to see everybody. Got several visitors here, and we appreciate you being here. This year we have been looking at, we've been having a theme of fulfilling my purpose in various aspects of life. We've looked at it in fulfilling my purpose in the church, in family, in our home, and in this quarter we're talking about fulfilling our purpose in recreation. And we've talked about recreation in various different ways. We talked about it from the way that Michael keeps bringing up, and I think it's a really good point, of how recreation is to recreate us. It is to give us a fresh viewpoint, a fresh day, you might say, all of those types of things. And so we've been looking at several things, and I entitled this lesson to begin with, and Eddie, this is not the title of the lesson. I entitled this lesson originally, The Rec Center. Because growing up, there was a place in my local town where you could go to the rec center. And you could play basketball. And you could play racquetball. And you could do taekwondo. And you could do, there was a track you could run around. There was all kinds of things. And you could find any recreation that you wanted. All you had to get was there. And so you were there, you were good. And I was going to use a little play on words, okay? Is that at the rec center, there was a heart of recreation. At the center of recreation, there is your heart, right? Because we've looked at from Luke the 12th chapter, verse 34, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And if we put any value at all into recreation, whether it is sports, whether it is some hobby, our heart will be there. And what we are going to see this morning, and Eddie, this is the title, I think. We're going to see that some religious people, their heart and the recreation is wrong. It is misplaced. I hope you are still there in 2 Timothy, the 3rd chapter, and what Georgie just read for us. And I want you to see three things here this morning that some religious people do when it comes to their recreation. I want you to notice verse 5, the verse that we just read, or the end of verse 4. The last phrase is some will be lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. And notice who these people are, verse 6. They hold to a form of godliness. They look like they are trying to follow God. But where is their heart? Their heart is not with God. Their heart is not in God. Their heart is in their pleasures. And by the way, this is not one of those words for pleasures that is lust. It is not a word that is inherently bad. It is just a word for something that you find pleasing to do. So it can be something that is good. It can be something that is completely acceptable to do. But yet you love that thing or that hobby or whatever it is more than you love God. And Timothy was supposed to hang out with those people. What did he say? Avoid such men. When a Christian loves his pleasure more than his God, we need to watch out. Because I tell you what, I am a person who loves pleasure. You know that I love recreation. You know I like to run. I like to play basketball. I like to play virtually any sport that is out there. I love to watch them. I love recreation. And I tell you what, it is a scary thought sometimes how much I love those things. Because sometimes I wonder, do I really love my God more than I love those things? Because they're so much a part of me. I plan my days around when I'm going to the gym or when I'm going to run or when I'm going to watch a football game or a basketball game. And you say, has recreation become the center that I am now basing the rest of my day around that? And that is a slippery slope. Some religious people do that. Avoid such people, Paul tells Timothy. Don't just feel comfortable because there is someone else at church who does that too. That's not the way it is to be. I want you to notice the second thing that some religious people do when it comes to their recreation. I want you to go to Luke, the 8th chapter. Many of us are probably familiar with the parable of the sower. Where the sower, he goes out, he sows seed, and the seed lands on four different types of soil. It lands on a very hard soil in which it never gets into the ground and it never brings any fruit. It lands on the rocky soil. And it goes into the soil and it immediately springs up. But when the sun comes out, it gets withered up because it couldn't get in there and get any root because of the rocks. And then the third seed lands on, or the same seed lands on a third soil, the thorny soil, in which it goes in and it's growing, but the thorns come in and smother it and choke it out. And then the fourth soil, the seed lands on good ground. It's been tilled. It's been taken care of. It's able to get in, form root. It comes up and it bears fruit at various different levels. And we know that that is a very spiritual application of that. And notice how Jesus explains that, because apparently this may have been one of the first parables he told his disciples. And his disciples are like, so what does this mean? And we get the benefit of Jesus telling us what it means. I want you to notice in the way Luke records this. In Luke, the 8th chapter, as he talks about that soil, that seed that landed in the thorny soil, notice verse 14. That which fell among the thorns, these are the ones who have heard. And as they go on their way, they are choked with worries and riches. And here it is, pleasures of life. And they bring no fruit to maturity. What happens with some religious people is that they choke out the Word. It is there. They've taken it in, and it looks like it is going to produce. But they think about all of the other things. The pleasures of life. The riches of life. And that becomes the thing which chokes out God's Word. And how fast does a choking happen? I find it very interesting that we talked about crimes of passion and all of those different types of things. A way, if you are really upset with someone and you want to show that you have the real power over them and you're going to take their life, you're going to strangle them with your hands. There is strength in that. It is slow. It is painful. And I think the idea of choking out, as we know the thorns, it's not allowed to grow. It gets smothered by it, right? It's because it doesn't happen overnight. It is a process over time in which before you know it, there is no more air to breathe. And it just creeps up slowly and slowly, these pleasures of life. So what happens? They bear no fruit. I want you to notice how Mark describes this very same thing in Mark, the 4th chapter. As he explains it to his audience, in verse 19 he says, the worries of the world and the deceitfulness of riches, and here it is, the desires for other things. What is it that you go after? Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And that's his point. We're desiring all of the other things in life except for, or maybe in addition to, the Word bearing fruit in our lives. We don't care to show that off. We care to show off how hard we have worked in the gym. We care to show off how hard we have worked in school. We care to show off how much I have, whatever the case. And we bear those fruits. And we show those. But yet, the Word is not bearing fruit in our lives. That's some religious people. The Word was there. It looked like it was going to do something. But over time, we use the phrase, it fizzled out. It got choked out. And I allowed that to happen. Some religious people do that. I want you to see a third thing that religious people do. I want you to go to the book of Hebrews, in Hebrews the 12th chapter. And in Hebrews the 12th chapter, we have a lot of different things that are going on. In chapter 11, a lot of people have just been commended because of their faith in the Lord. In chapter 12, we have the admonition to keep going because of what is lying ahead. Then we have an example of who not to be like. The third thing I want you to see that some religious people do is that they sell out. I want you to notice what is said about Esau. I want you to notice the beginning of verse 14. I want to read this in this context. Hebrew writer says, "Pursue peace with all men and the sanctification or holiness, without which no one will see the Lord." You want to see the Lord? You've got to be set apart, holy, okay? So verse 15, what does that require? "See to it that no one comes short of the grace of God, that no root of bitterness springing up causes trouble, and by it many are defiled." You watch out, and by the way, this spring up, this one actually happens fast. This bitterness happens fast. Our other was a slow process. This happens fast. Bitterness gets in, and isn't that one of the hardest things to ever let go of? Bitterness gets a hold of you, and you get that grudge, and it is hard to ever let go because it just wraps you up. See to it that no one falls short of the grace of God. You've got the grace of God. Don't let this bitterness grab a hold of you and keep you down. Well, who did that? Our buddy Esau. Don't be like immoral or godless like Esau. What made him so immoral and so godless? Well, there's probably a lot of things. But notice what he specifically states here. "Who sold his own birthright for a meal." He sold it. Well, what's the birthright? The birthright was that which was supposed to go to the oldest son. The oldest son, he would get a double portion of the inheritance. And just like today, when your parents die, someone has to take over the estate, the affairs. And that's usually the oldest son. That's what the birthright was for. You're in charge. All the other siblings answer to you. And you get double the portion. Pretty sweet deal. Except for the whole having to deal with the whole sibling type of thing. And all of the drama. And all of that that goes on. But the double portion part is pretty sweet. But guess when he could get that? When his father had passed. But he sold it. He sold that right to the birthright for a meal of food. And you remember that story, maybe. I want you to keep reading here, and we'll go back and we'll look at that story in just a second. Notice verse 17. You know that afterwards, and this would be several years later, I believe, afterwards, when he, notice the word, desired the blessing. It was now time. He wanted it now. He couldn't get it. He was rejected, for he found no place for repentance. He couldn't go back and change it anymore. There was no change, though he sought it. And I believe that is the blessing, the birthright, of which he said earlier, I'm giving up. He sought it later, but he couldn't get it because it couldn't be changed. What happened with him? Go back to Genesis 25. What do I mean he sold out? You hear this term often with musicians. Or you hear this term with someone who was famous or something like that. So we'll go with musicians because that seems to make the most sense. So a musician or a band, they come up and when you start, you don't have a big following at all. And you're just playing in these little rinky-dink little places, little holes in the wall where you might be getting 100, 200 people. And you start getting a little following. And you're like, man, you know what? You should really do X amount. You need to get out there. You got, now with YouTube, you got a couple million people who are following you. And you played a certain type of music. And those people who started out with you at the beginning, they loved it. That was their music. And then comes in that little sly record producer. And he says, you want to make some real money. You want people to really like you. Here's what you need to do to your music. And musicians do this all the time. They go from making what was very important to them. We're just a bunch of neighbors playing music in our garage or in our basement. To now they sell out and they're writing songs that they don't even believe. They're just doing it to make more money. And the original fans give up. You're a sellout. You sold out for the fame and the money. Well, Esau sold out. Esau had the right as the child, as the firstborn. But notice in Genesis 25, when he comes in from his job of hunting, he has caught nothing. He is hungry. And Jacob's cooking up some food. Old brother, twin Jacob, cooking up some food. And he is famished, he says in verse 30. And you know the feeling of being famished. You'll do anything for a meal. I just need some water. I just need some food. I don't care what it costs. I will pay 10 extra dollars for this meal of food. Just get this food in me. Jacob says, it's not about money, buddy. Jacob says, you first sell me your birthright. And Esau said, verse 32, I'm about to die. What use is it then to me? Esau saw zero value in his promise that was coming later. Because he was so worried about here and now. And he gave it up for a meal. And the New Testament tells us that is godless. That's what that is. When anything as simple as a pleasure of food, or we might have looked at that as a necessity of food, that goes before. We sell out. We exchange what is truly valuable for something that is worthless. And so, years later, when the time would have been handed down for the birthright to actually go to the oldest son. The father wanted to give it to him, you remember? Isaac said, Esau, go out of the field, kill the animal, come back and I'll bless you. And Mama Bear heard about that. And Mama said, Jacob, he's about to bless Esau. Go get this goat, skin it, put it on your skin, and go get the blessing. Oh, he went out. He got it. Feeds him. And you can almost picture this instantaneously. At least it's the way I picture it in my head. He's in the tent. Isaac can't see. Remember, he's basically blind at this point. He blesses Jacob, says that you'll be the greatest, your brother will serve you, etc. He goes out, and I picture just like in 2 to 3 minutes, old Esau walks in. Here's your food, Dad. Let's get on with the blessing. And he said, I can't, son. I can't do it. Notice verse 33, how Isaac, the father, felt. Isaac trembled violently. And he said, who was this that hunted game and brought it to me? And I ate it before you and blessed him. Who is it that I actually blessed? It affected him that he's shaking. What did I do? And Esau heard the words of his father, and he cried with an exceedingly great and bitter cry. And he said, bless me also, Father. But he couldn't. So he goes down and he blesses him down in verse 39. And notice what old Esau gets. Behold, away from the fertility of the earth shall be your dwelling. You get to dwell in the desert, Esau. And away from the dew of the heaven from above. Not going to get much water. And by your sword you shall live. You're going to be fighting. And your brother you shall serve. But it shall come about when you become restless that you will break his yoke from your neck. It's going to be a hard, hard life for you and your people. And the point is, he didn't care anything about it until it was too late. Couldn't change it. Years earlier, it meant nothing to him. It was not a treasure. So he sold it. So the devil went down to Georgia and he was looking for a soul to steal. All right? He sold it for that ability to play that fiddle. I asked the question, is that me? I'm going to give a scenario. There's this guy, and Raquel is here this morning. Raquel is a Villanova graduate. She will know this guy. She will at least know of him. His name is Scotty Reynolds. He led Villanova to, well, I should say as a rookie, he was the Big East Rookie of the Year. This was when the Big East was actually the best basketball conference out there. He was the Rookie of the Year that year. He was also in high school, and that was the one before, he was a high school All-American. 32 kids are chosen to play in a game. He was one of them. He went on to lead Villanova to the Final Four his junior year. He hit the layup in the final 30, well, it was really about final 5 seconds of the game. Goes end-to-end to score a layup to win, to take them Final Four. The next year, as a senior, he is voted unanimously as an All-American in all of college, where there are 5 first-team All-Americans. And you know what is interesting about this kid? When he was in high school, he grew up outside of Washington, D.C. The Washington Post, not some rinky-dink newspaper. The Washington Post covered him. And by the way, what magazine was he just on the cover of? Sports Illustrated. Washington Post covered him, and you'll notice the title of the article. It is Driven by Faith, Playing with passion. And Scotty's important to me because without Scotty's brother, I don't have one of my brother-in-laws. My brother-in-law was converted by Scotty's brother. They were good friends in high school. They played in the band together. And for whatever reason, my now brother-in-law decided to come to church with Eric one day. And after a period of studying and all those things, my brother-in-law became a Christian. Well, Scotty was just a really young boy at the time. Maybe 5 or so. Then they moved to Chicago not long after that, and then to D.C., and Chicago, back to D.C. All right. So it's high school, 18 years old. This is what the article says about him, and you can find it. It says, here, sitting in a room with in his parents' house, he's still speaking with a tone of calm, quiet confidence. Ask what motivates him and what he has learned thus far in his 18-plus years. And he turns to his religion, which he says transcends all his passions, including basketball. It's always been first with my family, says Reynolds, who attended a non-denominational church, Christian church in Annandale. There's a plug for the church in Annandale. Everybody that knows me knows that that's what comes first. It hasn't changed for 18 years. By me having faith, I can overcome a lot. Those are very bold statements to say to a Washington Post reporter, isn't it? Can you back that up? Notice the next paragraph. Religion also provided the backdrop for one of Reynolds' most legendary on-court moments. After attending, here it is, Bible study on a Wednesday night last year, Reynolds arrived at halftime for a top-10 showdown, not some rinky-dink basketball game. 2 top-10 teams in the state. He doesn't show up until halftime. He arrived at halftime. Reynolds scored 30 points in the 16-minute second half. And he trimmed the lead from 56-33 to a 10-point differential. They were getting smoked until he walked in the door. And notice what his coach said. Paul said that he wasn't surprised at Reynolds' performance, having watched him pull off similar post-church rallies when he was 10. Just like the Potomac game, the doors would open and he would be like Superman coming into the gym. He'd be pulling off his tie and his shirt and sprinting onto the court to save us, and everyone would just start buzzing. 8 years. He's been doing this. Everyone knows that if it's Wednesday or it is Sunday, he's not going to be there until church is done. AAU is the way you get scholarships in basketball. He played for an AAU team out of Chicago. He didn't go on Sunday mornings. They play all day on Sunday. He didn't go. And we think that we have to be there all the time, right? You saw what the kid accomplished, but we're not done. He could prove it. He could show that religion was the most important thing to him. And notice this, and this is not as renowned as the Washington Post. This is the Christian Chronicler. Well, this is somebody who is writing about Christians. And while he was in college there in Villanova, he worshiped with a church in King of Prussia. And this is what the minister said about him. He said, even after late night, out of town games, that might tempt less dedicated church members to stay in bed, Reynolds showed up to worship first thing Sunday. He's very faithful. And he's even taught our team class, Fletcher said. He attends worship service while the team practices on Sunday morning. He goes to practice after services. He's definitely a Christian. Christian role model?
Guess what? He got his college paid for. Guess what? He started. Guess what? He got the highest accolades you can have. And guess what he didn't put first? Basketball.
But you say, oh man, he grew up in a church. He was a Christian all of those years. Notice what the rest of the article says. He was baptized at 18. For 8 years, he had been skipping basketball games, even not as a Christian. Maybe parents made him do that. Maybe they didn't. But notice what he said. I've been going to church ever since I can remember. It's always been a part of me. But there comes a time in your life when you don't just go. It becomes a part of me. And when I was 18, that was that time. And ever since that time, I have tried to grow and lead others to the Lord. Is it a part of you? Or is it just something that you do? Where it becomes my purpose to be with others. It becomes my purpose to make sure that I don't put that first. That I keep religion as the most important thing. And understanding that if I am good enough, coaches will notice. People will notice. The Washington Post will notice. And I don't have to sell out. Because let me tell you what we need to remember. Go back to Hebrews, the 12th chapter. I'm going to close with this, and I'm going to do it very briefly. We're told, make sure we are not like Esau, who sold his birthright for a single meal. Why don't you go down to the final two verses of this chapter. Therefore, since we, that's you, that's me, that's Christians, we receive and we have received a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us show gratitude by which we may offer to God an acceptable service with reverence and awe, for our God is a consuming fire. Don't forget that. God doesn't care about your basketball career in one sense, does He? He does. He wants us to thrive in our work. He wants us to thrive in our recreation. But He wants His worship first. He wants His gratitude first. And when he doesn't get it, watch out. He is a jealous, consumed God. Brothers and sisters, let's not be those religious people who love pleasure rather than God. Who let the pleasures of life, whether they be music, whether they be hanging with friends, whatever they may be, choke out letting the Word bring fruit in our lives. And let's not sell out for anything short of the eternal grace that is offered in Christ Jesus. Subject to the invitation in any way or form, we ask that you come now as we stand and as we stand.